The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
Hi, this is Alan Chartok. It's the Capital Connection. Today, B. Krause. It's a very powerful group. B, tell us a little about yourself.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'll give you the short version of my whole life story. Thanks, and it's great to be on your show. I have been the CEO of the Healthcare Association of New York State, as you said, HANES, which is a trade association, and we represent all of the hospitals and health systems and nursing homes and other providers in New York State on federal and state issues. And with the economy, 20% of the economy being healthcare, that covers everything from financial issues to patient care issues, immigration issues, and the whole nine yards. So I've been here for 4 years now. I am a nurse by trade. I started my career as a registered nurse, and I've worked mostly in the emergency room and ICU. Went to law school, worked down in Washington, D.C. as a congressional staffer for a couple of years, and then as a lawyer and a lobbyist, working mostly, again, on healthcare issues. And then right before 9/11, my husband and I moved to Vermont, and I became the head of the Vermont Association of Hospitals and Health Systems and worked there for 14 years through the whole single-payer evolution, I guess, that Vermont had for about 4 years, raised our two kids, and then came here to Albany in 2016.
And where were you raised?
In New Jersey, actually.
Wow.
One of seven kids.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to Boston College for nursing school, and I went to Santa Clara University for law school.
Wow. Okay, so back in the day, as I remember it, upstate hospitals had one association, HANES, and the New York guys had another one. Is that changed now?
Well, it hasn't really changed. HANES is the statewide hospital association, so we represent hospitals across the state, so New York Presbyterian, Northwell, all the way to, Carthage, Erie County, all of the hospitals, north, south, east, and west, are under HANES Dome as a statewide hospital association. Greater New York is one of the five metros that represents hospitals in their metropolitan region. And, I like to think of healthcare as, politics is local, healthcare is local. And so the Greater New York is a great organization, and they represent the New York City metropolitan area. But they still exist. They're a very strong organization, and we work very closely with them, as well as at the national level, the American Hospital Association.
So what are some of your problems?
Well, right now it's really, we are focused on COVID-19. At the federal level, it is really around federal relief, not just for hospitals and health systems and other providers, but really focusing some of that funding to New York State. Currently, as you know, Congress has passed several pieces of legislation, commonly known as the CARES Act, that has authorized billions of dollars in funding. And of even though New York has cared for and the epicenter of the COVID-19 pandemic has been centered here in New York, 40% of the cases have been here in New York. New York State has only received 9% of the funding. So we're hoping that there are about $75 billion left for the Health and Human Services Agency to distribute, and we hope that funding gets that New York State gets a larger portion of those dollars.
Well, New York is a blue state, of course, and we think that the president of the United States has a little something with the blue states. Are you sensing that?
I think it's really in HHS's hands right now. And again, I think the funding has really not been blue state, red state focused, to be frank. It really has been based on formula. So I think rhetoric aside, I think there have been challenges with some of the disbursement methodologies. And again, they're all formula driven. So I think HHS has, we're waiting, very patiently, I guess, as patiently as we can, for the subsequent tranches of funding to come out. But HHS is being careful, I think, about that and reconsidering the formulas, because the early ones basically gave all providers across the country a little bit of funding, and it really, for areas that haven't seen much in terms of COVID cases, it was, it was welcome, mm-hmm. But unexpected dollars. And for places like New York, it was woefully insufficient.
Now, we do have, B. Grouse, we do have a governor who has played a tremendous role in answering some of the questions about the virus. So he obviously is now in a bad spot. He's at least $10 billion in the hole on his budget. He can't do that. So that may mean firing cops, firing teachers, and of course, into your bailiwick, firing people in hospitals at a time we need them the most. How do we deal with that?
Yeah, no, I think, let me just stop and say, I think the governor has done an amazing job. He has, been out in front every day, agreeing with the president when he needs to, and taking the president on when he feels that that's necessary. And along with the other governors, he is calling on Congress to, actually specifically calling on the U.S. Senate to take up the HEROES Act, which recently passed the House, which has $3 trillion in funding, particularly $500 billion for unencumbered funds, unrestricted funds for states, and $375 billion for counties. And so that funding is critically important. Again, New York State has been at the center of this pandemic, and the state of New York has spent billions in buying ventilators, personal protective equipment, flying in staff. And New York has, the governor, and I would say Mayor de Blasio, has really stepped up to the plate to really manage this pandemic as best as they possibly can. And they've suffered a loss of revenue and, exorbitant expense increases as a result of keeping people safe, and that has been their priority. They cannot survive this pandemic without the U.S. Congress and the president taking action.
So what would happen if, in fact, the president of the United States said not a penny more to New York than they're already getting? You got a $10 to $14 billion budget deficit. What would the hospitals do? What would they have to do to paint us a picture?
Again, I hope that doesn't happen. And I think the governor has certainly said that would be disastrous, really, for every community across New York State. Again, I think for healthcare often, hospitals are often the largest employer in the community, where, there are almost 850,000 hospital jobs across the state. And so I think if there were dramatic cuts, I think that communities would have to, or hospitals would have to look at how do they perform essential services, and how would they manage. And two-thirds of a hospital's budget is related to payroll. So it's related to clinicians and doctors. So I think the cuts would be draconian. I don't exactly know how it would pan out. And I think, again, that's why I think there will be a concerted effort to get those federal dollars and do our best to make sure that we are preserving jobs and preserving needed services in the community so that patients can get the care they need.
Well, B, do you have a plan?
Well, I think as a trade association, as an organization, yes, we do have a plan. And our members, they also, too, have their own individual plans. But there is not an aggregate plan statewide. We have to, again, I think if there are cuts in the short term, then I think that, that each individual hospital will have to enact their own plan for how they are going to preserve services in their community and how they are going to maintain financial viability.
Now, one of the things I worry about here, B, is that there could be a fight that develops between people who need the money. For example, the educational community and the healthcare community.
Well, that's nothing new. So, I mean, there is. I mean, there's always that fight.
Well, what would you do? I mean, would you say, okay, education community, yes, you're very important. The education of our kids is very important, but our healthcare is more important. Would you say that?
Well, again, we stay focused on healthcare, and again, you know, the battle to secure precious resources, or limited resources, is really nothing new. That really defines the state legislature, the state legislative session. So our focus always has been on healthcare. So we argue and educate lawmakers about the importance of adequate healthcare funding. So we don't typically say that schools don't need funding. I mean, that's just not how we roll.
One of my oldest friends in the legislature is Dick Gottfried. He's been there 1,000 years. Mm-hmm. And I think he is now the longest serving member in the legislature. And of course, has been a long term chair of the health committee. How do you get along with him?
Oh, great. I mean, you know, I talk to him often. He's a very good emailer. And so we stay in good contact.
Well, he's a progressive.
Yep.
He wants to see, for example, you know, universal health care, things of that kind in New York State. Is he right about that, or is the organization, the hospitals group, more, you know, centrist?
Well, you know, on the issue of a publicly financed health care system, as I said to you earlier, I came from Vermont and lived through the single-payer experiment that Vermont lived through, and I learned a lot in that. And it's not, transitioning to a publicly financed healthcare system is not anything like flipping a switch where one day you have, a multi-payer system and then the next day you have a single-payer system. It is really, again, with healthcare being 20% of the economy, it really is more of, turning a battleship, or some say fixing an airplane while you fly it. It is very, very complex. And I do not think that, certainly now, where we are with the COVID-19 pandemic, that trying to make that transition is completely out of bounds, and I think would be irresponsible to try to take that on at this point. I think we really need to focus on the basics. As far as the Haney's and our position, we have remained neutral on we have not supported the New York Health Act, which is the specific legislation that Chairman Gottfried has put out. But we have tried to, with both Senator Rivera and Chairman Gottfried, been very open to having conversations around how we can make the healthcare system better. But again, we haven't had those conversations in the last 6 months since February, because since the end of February, it has been all around the coronavirus.
We're talking to B. Grouse, who is the president of the Healthcare Association of New York State, Haney's. Okay. Does this pandemic that we're going through now reveal weaknesses in the system? And if it's so, what are they? How do we fix them in the midst of what could be a coming depression?
Sure. I mean, I think certainly one of the things that comes to mind for me is supply chain issues. You know, I think as the pandemic took off in the New York City metropolitan area, there was a huge, a rapid increase in the number of patients who needed COVID patients who needed medical care, and particularly ICU care. And they needed ventilators, they needed medication, and healthcare workers needed personal protective equipment, or PPE. So the surge in demand for supplies was really incredible. And at the governor's request, actually, we are now working with Greater New York and other regional partners, including the counties, to make sure that since there is concern around a fall surge of increased COVID cases, that we are reflecting back in order to plan forward so that we're prepared for that we've shored up the supply chains around all the different masks and stethoscopes and gowns, shoe coverings, et cetera, that that hospitals will need across the state to make sure that we don't have that scramble that frankly was nationwide.
Okay, so all hospitals are not equal in New York State, right? In other words, there are differences between public and so-called independent hospitals.
There are lots of differences. Lots of differences in hospitals, absolutely.
So who rules the roost when it comes to Haney's or the Hospital Association of New York?
Well, for Haney's, we have a 47-member board, and the way that
That's
our board is... It's a lot. The way that our board is constructed is that all the regional hospital associations for about a third of the board are selected by the regions. So the Western New York Hospital Association, for example, is allowed to select four or five members and put them on our board. So it's a representative board. So it is a committee of the whole. In that regard, in that sense, it's in a way it's like the U.S. Senate, I would say.
That's bad. So my my question is, the big hospitals obviously call a lot of the shots here, don't they?
Well, I think I think they are certainly very powerful and very influential, not just at a state level, but at a national level. I think Mike Dowling from Northwell and Steve Corwin from NYP are national leaders. So absolutely, they're extremely influential.
We try not to use abbreviations here, but I'm assuming NYP is New York Presbyterian?
Yes, sorry about that.
That's okay. How about the nurses and the doctors? Are they being protected? We hear a lot of news stories about how they don't have what they need to be safe. I wouldn't want to be doing their jobs. I think they're heroes. Should our frontline healthcare workers, and nurses specifically, be paid more for what is a life-threatening situation for them right now?
Well, I think that, I agree with you. I think our nurses and doctors have been amazing. There is no shortage now of PPE, personal protective equipment. There certainly was a huge scramble for PPE that was a focus in March, primarily in early April. So I think that problem has certainly been resolved, and I think the doctors and nurses are certainly working hard to continue their work, and I think the whole issue of additional pay I think is one at the federal level. We don't have a position on that, to be honest, and I think we're taking a look at it.
Hey, you're a nurse. Would you want to be in an emergency room right now?
I'd love to be in an emergency room, nurse. So that's an easy answer. Yes, I would love it. I would certainly have a gown and a mask and be certainly do everything I could do to protect myself. But taking care of patients was one of the great privileges of my career.
Nursing homes have been a particular place
for
the rapid spread of the virus. How do nursing homes and hospitals work together? I mean, there's been a lot of issues about that.
Yeah, I think generally they work very well together. In fact, many, obviously there's we call it the continuum of care, because, I like to think of it as a patient's journey, because patients don't, particularly the elderly and frail patients, it's not a question of, needing a few services over a short period of time. They need continuous services generally for the rest of their life. So it really is a journey. And so there's lots, at the local level, there's, constant interaction and collaboration with all sorts of providers, not just nursing homes, but home health providers as well. So in general, it's very good. And again, for patients in nursing homes, They, for those who are having medical issues, will go back and forth from a nursing home to a hospital, on a regular basis if they have the medical need.
So did the governor make a mistake? Some people think he did when he said, the nursing homes had to take people from hospitals and other places who had the COVID. Do you think he made a mistake in that?
You know, I think it's more important to look forward, not backward on that. And frankly, again, I think the governor has operated on data. He is using experts from around the globe. He has, been relying on CDC guidance and was always relying on CDC guidance when it pertained to the nursing homes, and stayed laser focused on saving lives, and has said that repeatedly. And I think he has always done the best that he can do every step of the way, and has been accountable for that. I don't think we can ask any more from elected officials.
Well, I'm a friend of his. I like him. But on the other hand, if you don't look back, how can you hold people accountable? How can you say, okay, this is what we shouldn't do in the future?
Well, I think that's part of why he is, having us to look back in order to plan forward on the fall surge. And he certainly has made changes in his nursing home directives in order to take additional steps to make sure that that the nursing home population is protected. So I think he's continuing to move forward and make decisions as he feels he needs to. So I think he has made important changes there. And it's not that, I think we certainly share the goal of making sure that healthcare workers in nursing homes and patients are protected. So we certainly want to, stay together on that goal. It's not that, that's part of what we do as an organization. We're a public policy organization. So it's not that we don't have discussion or disagreements around how to get there. But I think, we have generally been in agreement around that we have to do everything we can do to save lives.
Well, I'm glad you raised that. You said we have had disagreements. Name one.
Well, I think, let's stay on the nursing home issue. I think it's we're continuing to have discussions around who pays for them. Who pays for all the tests, the twice weekly tests now. So I think that's a work in progress. How are the tests going to get processed, and how are nursing homes going to make sure that they can turn around the tests in time to get the results that they need in order to staff their nursing home? So there are lots of challenges with working through some of those issues. So there's
Let me ask you a question, if I may. We've heard a great deal now about discrimination based on whether somebody's skin is black or brown, whether they're poor or wealthy. Mm-hmm. Do you think hospitals are in any way susceptible to that concept of unfair treatment of one group versus another?
I'm not exactly sure what you're asking, Alan, but I think if you're talking about might be located, is that what you're talking about in terms of in a poor community?
Well, in part, but also if somebody's skin is black or brown, or if they're poor rather than wealthy, do they get better or worse service? That's what I'm asking. And of course,
I certainly know physicians, and as a caregiver, you take the Hippocratic Oath, and clinicians are generally never thinking about, does this person have insurance or not have insurance? Are they poor? Are they rich? That just isn't even relevant. I can tell you, again, when the majority of the time that I worked as an ER nurse was in San Jose, California, in the county hospital. And so we treated the majority of the areas uninsured and low income individuals. And, it was not even a consideration. And I have never spoken to a clinician or anyone who would think otherwise.
Let me argue that with you for a minute. I do know
go ahead.
Among many surgeons now, for example, They're not taking Medicare. Well, once you don't take Medicare, you're engaging in a certain kind of economic discrimination because obviously you're taking the people who can afford it.
But that's not, you know, I would argue that that is not discrimination against an individual. That is discrimination against the payer because they are not, because they're not being paid. The payment that Medicare is paying or Medicaid is paying is not covering the cost. And so from a business standpoint, they can't stay in business if they take that insurance. So I don't think it has anything to do with the patient.
Our guest has been B. Grouse, president of the Healthcare Association of New York State, HANES. B., thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Alan.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.